You are listening to the one and only Visionaries Wrestling Network, envisioning excellence and providing your perfect podcast experience.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Why We Watch, the show for fans, by fans, about fans. I am Mags, and today I have got a very, very special guest. He's the head over at Chairshot Radio, where you can listen to my other show, Badlands. But he's also a huge content creator and also a wrestling promoter. He's got many fingers in many, many wrestling pies. Today I'm speaking with the head honcho himself, Mr. Greg DeMarco. Greg, how are you, sir?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic. I appreciate the opportunity to do this, talk about this kind of stuff, and just thank you for having me on.
Absolutely not a problem. It was an honor that you agreed to come on. So let's get into your history. Let's get into your wrestling story. Let's get into essentially why you watch. Why We Watch is proud to be working with Powerslam.tv. You can use our code MAGS to get yourself a 30-day free trial and watch up to 4,000 hours of quality independent wrestling content. Just make sure you sign up with your laptop for the code to work, and then after that you can download the Android app or the App Store app and watch this amazing content from Powerslam.tv.
Are you looking for the newest and hottest in the world of pro wrestling? Then check out the amazing action on Powerslam.tv, the biggest indie pro wrestling channel in the world. Get over 6,000 hours of the best events from over 150 of your favorite promotions from 20 different countries around the globe. Brands like Progress Wrestling, Evolve Wrestling, Combat Zone, Defy, PCW Ultra, PWX, Over the Top, Shine, and hundreds of others with fresh content added every day for only $5.99 per month. Get your free trial today at powerslam.tv.
Greg, tell us your first experience or your first memory of this wacky world of professional wrestling.
So for me, and I'm 43 years old, just recently turned that, and I first started watching wrestling with my dad, and I don't really have a ton of memories with my dad because my parents got divorced when I was one. But sitting with my dad on Long Island, New York, back in the shortly before the first WrestleMania, we used to have the MSG network back then, so you'd be able to watch all of the shows that they would tape and broadcast from Madison Square Garden. And so I saw things like, you know, Jimmy Superfly Snuka diving off top of the cage, which is the reason why Mankind became a wrestler, Mick Foley became a wrestler, things like that. I saw on television, didn't see it live, saw a rebroadcast of the first WrestleMania. I actually can track how long it's approximate, but how long I've been watching wrestling based on what WrestleMania it is. So coming up on 36 years of watching wrestling, thanks to WrestleMania 36. And it's just captured my imagination. You know, I was like, what is this? Why is this even happening? And, you know, the only thing I'd ever really seen in a ring at that really young age was boxing, and I didn't fully get into it. So it was just unlike anything I'd ever seen before. And, you know, captured my imagination from it was love at first sight for me in wrestling. And from there just grew to, you know, I feel so lucky that I got to grow as the business grew. And, you know, it was dirty and dungy and became everything that it is now with a spectacle like WrestleMania 36 coming up. And that's when I grew up. And so it's like this unique set of circumstances, you know, that happens to be when I was born, when I was watching TV, and what happened since then. And it's always been part of my life. Like, I don't know life without wrestling. And I don't know if I could. I've tried and failed miserably. Like, it's just not anything that you know, you can get rid of. You know, there's a line in the movie Brokeback Mountain where the guy's like, I wish I could quit you, or I can't quit you. That's me in wrestling, man. I can't quit it. I can't get out of it. And, and just the pageantry of it, the physicality, everything that it provides. You know, if you ever watch like a boxing match and it has a weird, disappointing ending, or a UFC fight has a weird, disappointing ending, wrestling doesn't have to do that. Yeah, that's the great thing about wrestling is when you predetermine what's going to happen, you get to make sure that it's going to turn out in a good way. And that's unique to wrestling. And now people will claim boxing or UFC is fixed and whatever. That's a different conversation. But to me, wrestling just it really is the best of – not even the best of both worlds, the best of all worlds. You know, you got the dramatic element, the storytelling element, the athletic ability, just all of it rolled up into one, and there's really nothing like it. I used to work – and still I work in the college and university setting, but years ago I worked at a college, University of Connecticut, and a colleague of mine came up through the theater ranks and studied theater at the University of Miami, and he would tell this story. That's where I met my friend Patrick O'Dowd, one of my two best friends. And our colleague of ours, his name was Mark. He would tell the story, because he knew we were into wrestling, about a theater professor he had at the University of Miami, which is world-renowned theater school, who told them professional wrestling was America's greatest form of melodramatic theater. And the fact that a world-renowned theater professor would say that about pro wrestling, to me, should tell us everything that we need to know. It's theater in the round. Which goes back, you know, to Shakespeare, and it's just presenting, it's putting on a show, and it's the, just the greatest show. Like nothing will ever suck me in like pro wrestling does. And it's always been there to me. It's an outlet for a lot of people. Sometimes life is great and you can sit down and enjoy wrestling. Sometimes life sucks and you can sit down and enjoy wrestling, and it's that escape. And that's why it bugs me when people take it so seriously and kind of ruin it for themselves, because it's just this amazing escape. But I came up through the WWF and sort of that rock and wrestling era, and just went through all the eras, a new generation and you know, into the Attitude Era and Ruthless Aggression, which is just a great series out now on the WWE Network, and on through the modern day. And of course, it was shortly after I started watching and maybe after the second WrestleMania, I don't know, where I was flipping through the channels and came across this other wrestling show that I'd never seen before. And they were in a TV studio and there was like maybe 100 people there. And there's this blonde haired guy wearing sunglasses who's talking about kissing all the girls and making them cry. And he's got the guys around, they're attacking everybody. And of course, that was the NWA. And that was the Four Horsemen and Ric Flair. And I was like, there's more. There's not just this one. There's others. And then I got sucked into that. And it was a completely different presentation. And that's where I started rooting for, quote, at that time, the bad guys. And it wasn't until, you know, we had the internet that I realized they were called heels, and just learned so much about, you know, wrestling. And so I would root for the bad guys. When Hulk Hogan feuded with Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff, I felt like I was the only person in the Nassau Coliseum rooting for Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff to win that match. And other kids were like giving me dirty looks and everything, and I didn't care. Now, I was the stereotypical John Cena hater, where I was rooting for Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff, but I was wearing a Hulk Hogan headband. So that's just tells you where we're at. Like the whole Cena, the yay boo thing is nothing new, and same with Roman Reigns now. But it just grew. And then of course started. You know, you fast forward to 2006. I moved from Connecticut back to Arizona, and at that point my life had ventured where I was doing stand-up comedy. I had done some improv comedy when I got out of college, and all still while being a wrestling fan, and reached out to a couple local wrestling promotions trying to get involved, and got linked up with one. Needed a ring announcer, so they're like, do you have any experience? And I was like, of course I do. I didn't. I lied completely. And this business is built on a lie and built on so many lies. But I think I told him I did some boxing and whatever. And I didn't. I had to wing it and figure it out. But did. Got involved as a ring announcer. Started doing more things behind the scenes there. That company merges with another. And the main guy is out of town all the time. And next thing you know, I'm booking wrestling shows. So this is like 2008 at this point. So I've been involved with the business for two years. And now I'm booking wrestling shows. And it's going well. And the storytelling aspect works. And it makes sense. Like most independent wrestling, that goes under and stop, you know, ceases to exist. And then we have in 2010, Ring of Honor, comes out to Phoenix, and they're coming to Phoenix, Arizona in support of WrestleMania 26. And the October before that, so a good 6 months before that happens, myself and one of the wrestlers for the company that I was helping book were chatting, and he was just like, Ring of Honor hasn't announced any shows. Like they haven't announced what they're doing in Phoenix for WrestleMania weekend. I was like, yeah, I know. And I had gone to Ring of Honor events when I lived on the East Coast like crazy. Myself and Patrick O'Dowd would go to Edison, New Jersey, and down to Philly, and you know, stuff in Massachusetts. We, as much Ring of Honor as we could see, we did. And so I was excited about them to come out. And so he was just like, you should hit them up and see if they need any help. Now, he was just trying to get booked. Like, that was his whole motivation. And what's really funny is that the day we're recording this is actually his birthday. But he was just trying to get booked. And so I was like, you know what? I will. And so I sent an email to Kerry Silkin, the then president of Ring of Honor, and was like, hey, I noticed you guys haven't announced anything for Phoenix. I'm here. We can help you. And a day later, I got an email from a guy by the name of Sid Ike. He was their executive vice president at the time. And he replies to my emails, this weird email address. And he just forwarded it. And so I saw Kerry's response. And all Kerry's response said was like, we have hit nothing but dead ends. We might as well try this guy. And he reaches out to me. And we had a couple phone conversations. I found a couple locations. Like, that was probably a Thursday or a Wednesday. And by Monday, he had flown out here. We had scoped out buildings. He had written a check, and their building location was secured for their WrestleMania weekend events out here in Phoenix. And so I actually worked with Ring of Honor. I got the ring. I got the lights. I got the guardrails. I was the main contact for the building, all this stuff. And when they came out, it was a great experience for me to get to work with them and kind of see the inner workings. Little known fact, those WrestleMania weekend shows in Phoenix, Arizona, in support of WrestleMania 26, those were their first WrestleMania weekend shows that ever turned a profit. Usually they operated those events at a loss because they need to do it for WrestleMania. But because we got everything so cheap, the building was cheap, and the building included all the chairs, which is a major expense in wrestling that people don't think about. It was great. I still remember this day at the end of the weekend, and like all I wanted was like some free T-shirts, right? Like yeah, give me a couple T-shirts, whatever. We'll be happy. Oh, funny story too. Right before the Friday night of the two shows starts, Sid comes up to me and he's like, "Hey, do you know anybody that can run a spotlight?" And I was like, "Not really. Why?" He was like, "Oh, we don't even run the spotlight." And I looked at him. I was like, "How hard can it be?" So the both of those shows, I sat sitting up on a scaffold running a spotlight, and Patrick O'Dowd sitting next to me. At first, he was complaining because we weren't sitting front row, but actually, the scaffolding where the spotlight is, it was one of the best places to watch the show from. Like, you could see everything. It was fantastic. But that's wrestling. Like, 5 minutes before a show starts, we don't have a spotlight guy, and we're like, how hard can it be? Their lighting lady came over and, like, yelled at me twice because I screwed up. I don't know. I was just like, I've never done this before. But because the shows turned a profit and did so well, I still remember this day. They paid me. They paid me for as a local promoter fee. They gave me a check. A check was for $1,000. And I was so excited, right? I just made $1,000 in World of Wrestling, go deposit check or whatever. Check bounced.
Oh,
check did
wow.
not clean, right? Ring of Honor pays me $1,000. This is back in 2010, so this is not the current regime. Check bounces, and I remember because I bought a computer and some other things, and they did make good on it. About 6 weeks later, they sent me $1,000 via PayPal and made good on it. And what was really funny that a lot of people don't know is that that was a couple weeks before their first ever internet pay-per-view, which was called The Big Bang, which they did in North Carolina. That almost shut the doors of that company. And there he was telling me about that. Like, that building cost them so much money. It was a bad deal put together by Jim Cornette. That almost shut the doors. They didn't, obviously, and Ring of Honor still Ring of Honor to this day. But they did. I still remember too. He was like, "Well, we're good. We can either send you a check or send you PayPal." And I'm like, "Send me PayPal. Just send me PayPal." And as soon as they sent me PayPal, I immediately deposited it and was so excited that. But, you know, I made, you know, that was still the most money I've ever made in wrestling, that's for sure. But more importantly than the $1,000, the experience I got, like literally having an executive sit across the table from me during breakfast and tell me, sometimes you got to screw somebody before they screw you. And he was talking about Dragon Gate USA and the shows they were going to be doing out in Phoenix. Which just lost a ton of money. That thing that was never in the black until WWE started supporting it. Just little things that you learn here and there. I still remember, too, that first breakfast that we had that morning when I picked him up from the hotel. He's looking at me and he's asking me, I'm like, "Oh, yeah, I got a wife. I got two kids. Here's my job. It's a good job." And he just stops and he goes, everyone who ever reaches out to us is a geek or a nerd or something. He's like, you're a normal guy. It's like, yeah. And at the end of the weekend, he goes, would you be willing to move to Bristol and work for us? I remember looking at him being like, absolutely not. It's funny because being offered a job in the world of wrestling is the dream, right? Mm-hmm. And just seeing how it worked, and that was before their check bounced. I was just like, I would move out to Bristol, Pennsylvania, and I could be jobless at some point. And I wasn't going to do that to my family. But yeah, Ring of Honor offered me a job in 2010, and I immediately turned it down. But that really shaped so much of who I was, because from there, you know, I wanted to get more involved. I opened up my first wrestling website in late 2010. It was called Atomic Wrestling News. It was terrible. I didn't know what I was doing. And also started writing for 411 Mania. And that's where a lot of people came to know who I was. And what's really funny, and I've been very open about this, Greg DeMarco is not my real last name. It's a different last name. But when I first ring announced, they're like, what's your name? And told them, like, oh, that's terrible. We can't use that. And so we came up with names, and Greg DeMarco was the one we came up with. And so when I started writing, I used that because if anybody was going to recognize a name, that was going to be the one. And so that's what I've always stuck with from moving forward. And I'm not shy about it. I don't shy away from it. My first farewell from 411 Mania, I even signed it with my real last name. Then I went back a couple more times after that because it's wrestling and you always go,
yeah.
But started writing for Mania, and that's where I kind of discovered writing about wrestling and media content and all that. And I remember the first article I wrote, I wasn't shy about my opinions, and I was reading through the comments. And back then, the comment section was anonymous. You didn't have to sign up for an account. You didn't have to be accountable for anything. You still really don't these days. But all the comments, a couple hundred comments, were either we love this guy or we hate this guy. And I was reading through them. I realized, okay, I'm on to something. Because that's when I learned, because no one ever taught me this stuff. My undergraduate degree was in business, and my graduate degree was in education. And, you know, I got my undergraduate in business from Virginia Tech, my master's in education from Arizona State University. And so I'm not trained in any of this journalism stuff at all. And I'm a reader, and that's when I learned it's not about making people happy. It's about eliciting emotion. And if you can get an emotional response from people, you've won. The worst thing that can happen is someone reads or listens and goes, oh, and then they just never think about it again. But I had people that were coming at me with hatred and vitriol, and people that were coming at me with like, this is amazing. We love it. And I knew I was onto something. So I just kept going. I just kept writing stuff and refused to ever fake it, right? Refused to ever be a gimmick. It had to be authentic. And I still remember a couple months later, the guy who runs 411, the owner of 411 Mania, sent an email to the staff because their comment section got real bad. Like, people were going after people's families, people were making threats, the writers were fighting back. It was great, but it was really, really negative in a lot of ways. And he writes this email, and he's just like, from this point forward, none of you can engage with the commenters. Nothing good can come of it. Do not engage with the commenters. And then he literally said this, unless your name is Greg DeMarco, do not engage with the commenters. Because that was my thing and that was working and it didn't bother me. And that was driving the hits up because people were coming back to the article multiple times to see what was happening in the comments and to see how we'd reply. And then I started putting the comments into my articles and replying to them, and it just became a thing. And it was all about that interaction. And that has led, you know, to everything I do in wrestling now. That's built that number one value that I have in the world of wrestling, and that's eliciting emotion. And that's why WWE is so successful to this day. It has nothing to do with in-ring performances, none of that stuff. It's all about eliciting emotion, knowing your audience and getting them to react. And that's really what everyone does. I eventually, you know, worked on building my own websites, and that led to 2017 as we were, you know, appearing on different podcasts and getting people together and developing relationships. And I decided that I wanted to really make a go of the website thing. And I had done some things and dabbled, but it was never full bore gung ho. And so explored different names. I came up with the Chair Shot and developed chairshot.com. Put that group of people together, PC Tunney from the DWI Wrestling Podcast, which is Drunk Wrestling Intellect, and some other folks. We came together. Of course, at that point, I had my you know, I started the Greg DeMarco Show in 2011, which we just recently rebranded Chair Shot Radio with a move over to eWrestling News to keep the Chair Shot brand going and prevalent. And just brought people together as podcasters, started recruiting writers. And writers come and go, but people like Andrew Belaz, who came on board in 2017, and we still do stuff together to this day, and just really got, you know, surrounded myself with some good people and just kept moving forward from there and building that. And I've been lucky enough over the years of interviewing folks. I have some good relationships. I have relationships with people on the inside of WWE, and no one believes me because, like, I choose not to use them. I'll get information. I'm not going to report on it. Because if I report on something that a higher ranking agent backstage in WWE tells me, guess what happens? He didn't tell me things anymore. He doesn't communicate with me anymore. Like, it's less important to me to be somebody who can report wrestling news, which I hate, than it is to continue to build those relationships. So my two best friends I have from the world of pro wrestling, you know, Patrick O'Dowd and Miranda Morales are both my friends because of wrestling. Would not know either of them. I'd know Patrick because we met in a work setting, but that connection was wrestling. I met Miranda through wrestling, and she quickly grew to become one of my best friends. None of that takes place without wrestling. Like, my own wife, who I've been married for 20 years, been together for 24, early on, she even was like, she knew that, you know, she could never cure me, I guess, of wrestling, that she either had to accept it or move on. And she immediately accepted it. She's tried. She would go with me on occasion and all of that, and just never really got into it, and is probably thankful for the fact that I have people I can interact with on the wrestling side of things so she doesn't have to. But that's really been, you know, content creation and all of that is just something that it's evolved over time for me. You know, the whole reason that the Greg DeMarco show ever started was because I appeared on an episode of the 411 on wrestling with Larry Zonka and Steve Cook back in 2011, or maybe late 2010. And this is terrible for me to say out loud, but I will. I was listening to their show and I was like, it's okay. It's not the best ever. And I remember talking to Patrick and being like, if they can do it, so can we. Because he and I, he lived in Connecticut, I lived in Arizona. So we would talk on the phone all the time. We talked about wrestling. And I was like, what if we just recorded that and turned it into a podcast? That's all really podcasting is, right? It's people listening to our conversations. So we did. And that was in 2011. The first one was terrible, as usually happens. And now we're coming up on 9 years of podcasting, and it's evolved and changed, and we've been on different networks, and you know how that goes. And there we are today. And we, of course, you know, now with the move over to eWrestling News and trying to build a bigger audience for everybody. And that's really the impetus behind that. I had a conversation with aforementioned Miranda Morales back in December, and I was like, I want to grow my brand and I want to grow the brand for everyone else. And when you start a wrestling website in 2017, you're 20 years behind the bigger the Wrestling Inks and the 411 Manias and stuff like that. And so I started researching and who we could look at and who we could partner with, and ended up coming up to a deal with eWrestlingNews.com, and that's brought us to where we are today. It's still a transition, takes a while to move everything over and to get things going, but we're still working on all of that. But it's really been exciting to see. Right now it's been exciting for the writers. The next is going to be exciting for all the podcasts, and we're really going to, you know, push this thing as we head on the road to WrestleMania. But it's just another step in the evolution, and that's really what it all is. And from a content creation standpoint, I never stop thinking. Every single day I'm thinking about, what can I put together? What can I do? Can I make a new show? Can I do a new kind of article? And it's just, that's the passion. You know, it doesn't pay the bills, and so I have a real job. But that's a source of passion for me. I've never had a job that I felt so passionate about like this. And so I do this to keep everything else going. I'm passionate about my wife, my kids, my family, my friends, and wrestling. And then the job is just the job. And I go and I do it for 8, 9, 10 hours a day. And it pays the bills and it allows me to continue to do this stuff, which I love so much.
And all that was from the first question. What was your first experience of wrestling? You've pretty much done the full show, so I might as well do a sign off. Going back to that kind of genesis of your wrestling fandom, who were the wrestlers that you really gravitated towards? Who were your guys back then?
Oh, originally it was Hulk Hogan. Like, that was in that Rock and Wrestling era where Hogan came up. It really did suck me in. Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff was another early favorite of mine. Don Morocco was a big favorite. Then as it evolved, you had Ricky the Dragon Steamboat and the Macho Man Randy Savage. They all really captured the imagination. Then when I discovered the NWA, it was the Four Horsemen, Ric Flair, Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard, Barry Windham, Luger, all those guys. I got turned on to tag team wrestling, like really turned on to tag team wrestling because of the Midnight Express. You know, at first it was Beautiful Bobby and Dennis Condrey, or Bobby Eaton and Dennis Condrey. Then, of course, Stan Lane replaced Dennis Condrey and Beautiful Bobby and Sweet Stan. That's still to this day my favorite tag team ever. The only tag team that's ever come close to that is the Revival. And I just really fell in love with tag team wrestling from that perspective. And of course, the Road Warriors were always this larger than life tag team, and I bought into them. I didn't appreciate like a Dusty Rhodes until later in life. I don't know if it was the physical appearance. I don't know what it was, but then I learned more about, okay, that's when I kind of learned how the magic happens and you realize what people do to get somebody else over, and you're supposed to like the guy they get over. And so for me, yeah, it's kind of a hodgepodge list, but Hogan, Flair, Orndorff, just because of the time period, Morocco, Steamboat Savage, the Midnight Express, the Horsemen, those are really all the major early influences. And then Bret Hart, I loved when I started. I remember watching the Hart Foundation as a tag team and fell in love with Bret Hart as a performer, even when he was just in a tag team, just because he was so different in everything he did. You know, hearing Gorilla Monsoon call him the Excellence of Execution back when he was part of a tag team, that was like dead on for me. It was so accurate.
Yeah. Same kind of a fandom that I had. I was a massive Road Warriors fan. Yeah, tag team wrestling, that's my bread and butter. I absolutely love tag team wrestling. So you mentioned then all the kind of eras of wrestling that you've gone through your fandom. Which would you say is the era that you enjoyed the most, that you were the most invested in wrestling?
You know, it's interesting because the Attitude Era is one that we all look at with rose-colored glasses. And when you go back and watch some of those old episodes, you're like, ooh, wow, that wasn't as great as I thought it was. But the business adjusted for the time period. And it's fascinating to see. Had that not happened, who knows where wrestling would be today. But, you know, I believe everything happens for a reason. That was always going to happen. And so for me, that was a huge part of you know, wrestling and how we got to where we are is the Attitude Era. But following along pro wrestling from there, my favorite time period in wrestling is really specific. But I would say from 2005, 2006, 2007, Ring of Honor is my like all-time favorite time period as a fan. Like that's just – it was so different. I remember going to those events and just getting sucked in because they were still telling stories. People always talk about in-ring. They were telling stories just in a different way. And I will never look on anything outside of my own experiences in the business, which we haven't fully gone into, as fondly as I look at 2005, especially 2006, because then I moved from Connecticut to Arizona. Ring of Honor, like those are some of my best memories in the wrestling business as a fan.
Yeah, in that kind of time period, that was when I was checking out of wrestling. It just wasn't speaking to me, and we didn't get Ring of Honor over here, obviously, because it was a quite a localized promotion back then, and we didn't have the capabilities to get all the wrestling that we do now. But yeah, I checked out for about 10 years altogether, and it was New Japan that dragged me kicking and screaming back into wrestling.
It's always going to be something, right? There's always going to be something.
Yeah, I was kind of I was out of watching wrestling, but I checked on it all the time. I was a member of the forums over at lordofpain.net, and I knew all the results. I'd go on like for all the Raw and Nitro results all the time, but I didn't actively watch wrestling.
It's hard. I mean, I've gotten out of it before, or tried to get out of it. And it just, for me, just never, like you were able to get out for a decade. I never got away. I remember stopping writing at time frames, and we would even stop podcasting. And a few months later, I'd be like, hey, you know, talking to the wife, you know, they might pick this back up again. And she's always really supportive of it. My wife's name is Holly, and she's an amazing individual. And you know, we're married for 24 years or 20 years, been together for 24. Always super supportive of it and knows that it's something I love and it's something that's a passion of mine. So I don't know how you did it. I don't know how you pulled off getting out of it for 10 years. I could never get out for more than like 10 days.
It seemed. Yeah. Now I'm fully back in the wrestling world. My life revolves around it, and I'm in kind of a similar situation with you, with your wife. My wife has absolutely no interest in wrestling whatsoever. She's forever telling me to grow up. You know it's fake, don't you? That kind of stuff that you get. But again, she's massively supportive of me creating podcasts and stuff like that. So I can feel where you're coming from there. So you mentioned some of the live shows that you've gone to and some of the live shows that you've been involved in. What would you say is your best ever live show?
In terms of attending a live show, because there's a big difference between stuff that you put on and stuff that you attend. My most favorite memory of a live show I went to was back in 1988, the Richmond Coliseum, or maybe 87. I have to go back and look. But I went to a stop on the Great American Bash tour at that point, and that was the second summer of War Games. So the first summer of War Games, they just had the two War Games matches. But the second year, they took War Games on tour. And so I went to the NWA Great American Bash show at the Richmond Coliseum, Richmond, Virginia. And this show had everything. It had a scaffold match between the Midnight Express and the Fantastics. And then I remember we had to wait this long break where they took the scaffold down and then lowered the War Games cage. And then it had the Four Horsemen, and you had Dusty, Nikita, the Road Warriors, staying all kind of their opponents in War Games. And just seeing War Games live, it was the first ever cage match that I saw live was actually War Games, which is kind of crazy. That War Games, of course, had a roof on it, and just didn't know what I was in for, didn't know what I was going to be seeing, and it just really does jump out at you. The worst part was that the very next summer, that Great American Bash tour, they were doing the two-ring battle royal. So now I'm sitting there in basically the same seats looking at the same two rings, but no giant cage was going to come down. It was kind of disappointing. That War Games thing was just the peak. But seeing War Games live as a kid was just amazing. The other one that always jumps out, and Patrick O'Dowd and myself still refer to this as the knockoff of Tony Schiavone, what we call it, the greatest night in the history of our sport. We went to Final Battle 2005 at Edison, New Jersey. The show was like 5 hours long. 10 matches, but it had double main event. It had Brian Danielson at the time, of course, now Daniel Bryan, defending the Ring of Honor World Championship against Marufuji Naimichi from NOAH. And then the main event was low-key challenging Kenta for the GHC Junior Heavyweight Championship. And the show itself was great. You know, Austin Aries and Roderick Strong became Ring of Honor tag champs that night. But just those matches alone, it was the kind of night, like people always say, fight forever and whatever. I didn't want that to end. And it's when it ended, we didn't realize it's like already, and it had been 5 hours. And you just didn't know. Like they had, when they released it on DVD, they had to release it on two discs. And I just remember, you were a fan, you were sucked in. Everything they did, it was just amazing and fantastic. And I will never forget sitting there in the second row, or I think that was the fifth row, of Final Battle 2005, what we call the greatest night in the history of our sport. One more I want to share comes in 2006, and it was a weekend of Ring of Honor that we did. And I think it was my last live Ring of Honor show before I moved. We went to Ring of Honor Friday. On Saturday, we went to CDZW. Best of the Best, and then that night, Ring of Honor. This event they eventually titled Ring of Homicide. And the reason why it stands out, it was a good show, but it was supposed to be Samoa Joe versus the Necro Butcher. Joe was injured. They found a way to creatively take him out. Homicide takes his place. Him and Necro battle all over the place. And then Homicide grabs a chair, throws it in the ring, and then instructs all of us to throw our chairs inside the ring. And so I got, you know, there's like six or seven chair riots in the history of wrestling, and I got to be there for a chair riot. Sitting in the second row, it's kind of scary because chairs are flying from behind you. You can't see them. But to be a part of just throwing folding chairs in the ring is something that I would never duplicate it as a promoter. That's for sure. The building would probably never let us run there again. But being a part of a chair riot is something I will never, ever forget. Scary, fun, all at the same time.
Wow, that sounds like it would have been amazing to be a part of.
I don't recommend it, but I do recommend it all at the same time.
So coming on to the kind of the present day, you've spoke about NXT being your wrestling wheelhouse, but with the content that you create, you kind of have to watch more wrestling. And right now there is more wrestling than ever before. So what are some of the wrestling that you are keeping an eye on? What are some of the wrestling that are really piquing your interests?
Well, and NXT is the number one. It's just, to me, it's the perfect wrestling product. The in-ring, the storytelling, the presentation is unique to me, and I really love NXT and the talent they have there. Includes most of my favorite wrestlers of today are in NXT. I won't name them off yet because that's probably another question. But I still keep tabs on Raw and SmackDown because you have to in our business. It's what's going to drive the most eyeballs from a content creation perspective. And if you're going to talk to casuals and get them in, you got to know Raw and SmackDown. So Raw and SmackDown is a big part of it. I feel bad in saying this because it's going to sound crazy to the general core audience of a podcast. I don't watch AEW every single week. And here's the reason. I know. Sorry. It's a time thing for me. Like, I just not enough hours in the day. I keep tabs on it. I follow it. We're recording this before the Revolution pay-per-view. We talked about it last night. I had to fill in on Pod is War. I didn't know all the matches that were on the Revolution pay-per-view. I knew the big ones, but I didn't know all of them. And it's just you hit a saturation point as an individual. The business hits a saturation point. The market I live in hits a saturation point. But as a person, you hit a saturation point, and I basically hit that because I've got two kids. My son is a soccer player, or for your hometown listeners, a football player, and a good one. And he plays goalkeeper, and so it's very busy. My daughter's a dancer, and those are both things right there. Those are 5 days a week, and mm-hmm. they got to go to practice. They got to do all that. My wife is an assistant principal of a high school, so she's got things outside. I'm a manager at my job, and you know, I, over the past 6 months, or not even 6 months, 4 months, I've had a renewed focus on, you know, my own personal fitness, and I've lost over 40 pounds and I have to work out all the time. That takes time as well. And so it's just like, there's just not enough hours in the day. And so AEW became a casualty of that. That said, All In's one of my favorite shows I've ever seen. So it's kind of crazy that, you know, the way that falls by the wayside. Then there's also kind of the next level. I love Major League Wrestling. MLW is putting out a product that's super enjoyable, one that I love following. I'm excited. Whenever I hear they might get a TV deal, I get excited about it because I just really like what they're doing. And what they're putting together. I know some of their performers. Back in 2016, I put on some shows in Arizona. I booked Alex Hammerstone, who's now their national openweight champion. He's such an amazingly talented performer and just a good dude to talk to as well. So I really follow that closely because I'm a big fan of what they do, and I think it's different, and I think it has a chance to catch on and be that product. I also really enjoy NXT UK, which I do view as separately from NXT. The first ever United Kingdom Championship tournament, to me, turned me on to British wrestling big time. I didn't follow Progress closely. I didn't follow that. I followed a little bit of Over the Top just because some people had recommended it. But seeing that first United Kingdom Championship tournament, like, it's funny that, you know, after the first night, I loved, you know, Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate. And of course, they go on to be the finalists of that tournament, and Tyler Bate wins. Still, the British Strong Style are three of my favorite wrestlers. Like, they're just great performers. I wish they would just fully bring them to NXT in US and let them go crazy with Undisputed Era. But NXT UK is one that, you know, my favorite pay-per-view of 2019, since that year is over, was, you know, TakeOver Cardiff. I thought that was the best show of the year, in my opinion, including a last man standing match that I thought was going to be skippable. And then they ripped the turnbuckle off in 30 seconds. And next thing you know, that it was off to the races, especially knowing that was actually supposed to happen. But yeah, there's just so much good stuff out there. But I really try to keep tabs on all of it. But it's just, I don't want to say it's impossible, but man, you've got, you know, it probably takes a level of sacrifice that as a 43-year-old father of two and devoted husband, I can't do.
Yeah, I'm totally there with you. It's a very, very first world problem to have. The fact that you don't have the time, but for me, it's New Japan. New Japan's my big show. Like you, I'm a massive NXT and NXT UK fan. I do fit in AEW basically because it's the hot new thing, and having a podcast, that kind of subject will always come up. I've been enjoying it. I think it's a really well done product, especially for a company that's a year old. I think they're doing amazing stuff. But yeah, I'm a big fan of the local scene, the Britrest scene. Yeah, it's absolutely phenomenal. And some of the smaller companies here are doing some great stuff. Stuff like Breed Wrestling, stuff like Riptide and Reach are just doing absolutely amazing wrestling. And luckily, we're able to see these because they're on all these kind of streaming sites and you can access them at the touch of a button. How do you feel that this kind of process, how this kind of like influx of streaming has helped the wrestling business?
It's been a game changer for the wrestling business. It used to be to succeed in the wrestling business, you had to have television, and there's only so many television hours available to wrestling, and streaming has changed the world. Streaming hasn't just changed wrestling. Streaming has changed the world. I don't have cable. I don't. I have YouTube TV. We have Philo because my wife wants to watch A&E. I have WWE Network. I have Disney Plus. I have all that stuff, right? And which equate, you know, I'm not really saving any money by cutting the cord because we just spend it on those other things. But we just watch in different ways, and that's why the cable industry is struggling. That's why, you know, Fox gave the bag to WWE for SmackDown, because live athletic content is still what people can't necessarily time shift the way we can time shift other shows. And so wrestling followed suit. Wrestling kind of led the way. I mean, WWE Network was the first of its kind in so many ways. And was, to know that Vince McMahon's first thought of it in like 1988 is just insane. Cause Al Gore hadn't invented the internet yet, but it was, For wrestling, it was just a game changer. I mean, anybody can get their content out there, and the wrestling fan base will just absorb more and more. Just give me more, give me more, give me more. And I think it's because as a younger fan, you knew there was so much out there. I would read wrestling magazines, and I'd be like, you know, that's where I learned all about Memphis, but I couldn't watch it. And I couldn't see it, but I read about it and I'd want to watch it. And that's how tape trading became so popular, because people wanted more and more and more. And so the streaming culture that we're in now, it really, that and wrestling go together, you know, hand in hand so perfectly. They're puzzle pieces that fit together so perfectly. And that's allowed the business to take off. That's allowed individuals to get so much more exposure. That's allowed companies to go off in other directions. You look at like Progress and Over the Top and these companies in the UK that can run these big, huge buildings at times. And ICW is one that I'm thinking of as well out there. Without streaming, I don't know if they get to that level. And NXT, I don't know if NXT is a major third brand on television, you know, if not for streaming on the WWE Network. So, you know, Evolve and, you know, Dragon Gate USA that evolved into Evolve was all because of streaming. Ring of Honor was kept alive by that for a while. Streaming has definitely changed wrestling. I mean, look at the popularity of Fight.TV and AEW. Their initial core fan base was built off of YouTube videos. It's something that is it's changed our culture. It's changed our world. And so if it didn't change wrestling, I don't think wrestling would still be here. You know, Triple H actually, when NXT was coming up and sort of changing the game a little bit, at what the ending of one of the opening NXT videos, he had the phrase evolve or perish. And that's what streaming is. You either evolve or you're going to die off. And it really has changed the business. And I don't even think we know all the ways it's changed the business, and we may not know for another 20 years, and hopefully you and I will be around to see that. But it really has changed the world, and that includes the world of pro wrestling.
Yeah, totally agree. We're from an era where, like you kind of touched on, you got what you were given, and if you didn't like that, there was no other option. Now you can watch wrestling from Australia, Mexico, Japan, Guatemala, if you wanted to, all at the touch of a button. And it's kind of the wrestling fans nowadays, or a lot of the younger ones, are kind of spoiled because of this, because there's so much content out there. They get what they want when they want, and that kind of feeds into the next question I wanted to touch upon. This wrestling world is so ingrained with social media, and especially hashtag wrestling Twitter. What are your thoughts on the use of social media in wrestling, and also the kind of toxicity that it can build up?
it's kind of like the streaming discussion we had. Social media changed the world. Mm-hmm. It did. It gave everyone a voice, and it also gave everyone this like protective wall around them because everybody can be a keyboard warrior. And I'm fearless in a lot of ways in life, and that includes using social media. And it just it is toxic. It is tough, and it can be used for such good. But like anything that's good, people find a way to ruin it. And to me, social media got ruined in a lot of ways. I've used it to promote. I've used it to promote wrestling. I've used it to promote my content. I've used it to build relationships and network and connect and all of that. And then I went through some stuff in my personal life last year to the point where I realized I was constantly check Facebook, check Facebook, check Twitter, check Instagram, check whatever. Not really Instagram, but Facebook and Twitter. And I hit this point. It was November 1st of 2019. I decided I was going to give myself one day off of social media. One day where I didn't go on Facebook and I didn't go on Twitter. I was at work that morning. I was checking. I was like, you know what? I'm not going to check it the rest of the day. 20 minutes later, guess what I did?
Exactly. I checked Facebook.
And so what did I do? So I deleted it off my phone. I deleted Facebook off my phone. I deleted Twitter off my phone. And I posted. I was like, I'm taking the rest of the day off. And I actually did. And I never put it back on. You know, today's February 29th. So that's been all of November, all of December, all of January, and all of February. So 4 months, pretty much to the day, that I still have not reinstalled Facebook and Twitter on my phone. A week later, I found myself perusing Instagram too much. So I deleted that too. Because of my involvement in the world of wrestling, I have Messenger on my phone separately, which is nice. Running a wrestling company, which we'll probably get into, I have to do a lot of stuff on Facebook. But you can actually do that from a Facebook Pages manager, and so I don't need to go on my personal account to do that stuff. I've found kind of ways around it and still continue to explore that. I use Buffer, which is a program that can post directly to Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram to make the posts that need to be made. And my life feels better because of it, which is crazy. I know that at some point I'll go back and interact more. I had to do a lot over the past few weeks for my recent wrestling show and even joking with people. It's time to go back into social media hiding because it just commands so much of our attention and so much of our energy, our mental and emotional energy. And it's like, why do we allow this electronic digital version of people to command so much of our energy when I've got wonderful people in my own house and in my life. And so when I did that, it's kind of funny, but there were specific people that I said, hey, I'm doing this. So can we, so I used to, you know, one of my two best friends, Patrick O'Dowd, I've always texted with him because I've known him for 16 years. Miranda Morales was always Facebook Messenger. So I had to be like, hey, can we move to text? And so I had to start moving those conversations to text. And so when I check back in on social media, you know, as you know, a month in, 2 months, 3 or 4 months in, here's the crazy thing about it. It hasn't changed. It's still the same. It's still negative. It's still toxic. And I just haven't missed it yet. You know, I'm sure I will. You know, it's kind of like people complain about Io Shirai not being on NXT. I can't miss you if you're never gone. It's okay that she's not on NXT. That's how I feel about social media. I can't miss it if I never got away from it. So I'm sure I'll miss it at some point. That point hasn't hit yet. But you also can't deny there are companies, our primary form of marketing for my local wrestling promotion is social media. And we sold out our last show last weekend. So obviously it has value. Companies invest millions of dollars. I'm sure, you know, over the course of a year, Facebook drives, you know, ad revenue in the billions. It's just, it's an industry. It's a part of our culture. And it's not, you can't hide from it no matter how much you want to, but it is toxic. Like you said, it does have that negative connotation to it. And if you're not smart, it's very easy to let that trap you and to let you get caught up in that. And so sometimes you got to make a personal choice to do something different. My wife recently decided to go off of it and because it was, you know, becoming a negative thing for her too. And so now she goes on once a month to upload all the pictures because she's big on taking pictures of our family and things we're doing. So she'll go on every few weeks and upload all those pictures and then check out. And she knows that people can reach her and there's ways that people can reach us. You know, and you and I are both old enough to realize there was a time frame when we didn't know it existed. We lived life before Facebook and Twitter and social media, and we were okay. You know, we were better than okay. So it's given us a lot of great things in life, and it's given us a lot of bad things in life.
Yeah, I agree. I love and hate wrestling Twitter. I mean, I'm not a Facebook guy at all. Never had a Facebook account. Looking at people's pictures of what they've had for their lunch kind of doesn't really interest me. But yeah, I'm deep into wrestling Twitter. But I think I've got the kind of balance that where, as long as you surround yourself with open-minded people and open-minded followers, you kind of weed out that kind of toxicity. You kind of stay away from it. But yeah, you touched on the exact reason. It's the anonymity. It's the fact that it gives people a chance to say and do the things that they wouldn't ordinarily do if the people knew them in real life. It's sad that wrestling it gets people to this kind of like mindset where they want to attack rather than just love the fact that there's a massive group out there of wrestling fans, whether you like the same kind of product or not. It's not something to argue about. It's the fact that you are both wrestling fans. And yeah, it's weird to me. Weird, but interesting to watch, I'd like to think.
Yeah, wrestling Twitter, wrestling social media, and wrestling fans in general are will eat their own more than anyone else sometimes. And it's sad because I remember being at those Ring of Honor shows in 2005, 2006, and it's like I don't know any of these people personally, but yet we felt like we were all friends because we're all sharing in the same thing that we love so much. And I think in a lot of ways we get away from that. There are some great groups of people who have been smart enough to not get away from that. You know, you look at the contingent of women that attend all those Ring of Honor events. Like that mm-hmm. is a group that I can tell has grown so close. And there's also a lot of fake people out there. And I appreciate the ones that are real and the ones that are together. Because there are some people that owe their entire friendship circle to social media and mm-hmm. wrestling. And it brings joy to their life. And so I don't think anybody could really be upset about that either.
Yeah, I totally agree. So let's circle back to your content, and not only your content, the fact that you actually run a promotion. You've kind of touched on it a couple of times, but let us know a little bit about the promotion that you're running down there in Phoenix.
So I run a company called Impact Zone Wrestling, IZW. There have been two Impact Zone Wrestlings, one out here and one in Oklahoma. IZW actually started in 2000, believe it or not, 20 years ago, and it ran for 10 years through 2010. And I didn't really get involved until 2007, 2008, and got heavily involved and, you know, over time. And then in 2010, the venue that we ran, it was a little a bar in Tempe, Arizona called The Sets, abruptly shuts down. And the company struggled to find new places to run and eventually just fades away in 2010 and stops running. Fast forward to early 2019, the guy who was running at the time puts out a thing about a reunion show. And they talked about reunion show here and there. And so they decided they were going to run a reunion show in May of 2019. I actually ran into this guy at Royal Rumble Access, because Royal Rumble was here in Phoenix in 2019, ran into him, was chatting with him. And shortly after that, he asked me if I would help produce the show. And because at that point, I was more on the background, because in 2018, he had worked a show that I produced, and I was calling all the shots. I did the format. I did everything. And I asked him for his feedback on it, because he, you know, at that point, he'd been in the business for 28 years. And just trying to get that feedback and just nothing but positivity from him and from his wife, who's also a wrestler. And so they asked me to produce the IZW reunion show. Produced that, great crowd. A lot of the old timers came back. Some people, you know, had retired and wrestled one more match. A lot of different things took place. And that was in May. And everyone's like, bring it back, bring it back. You got to bring it back, you got to bring it back. And he was like, there's no way we're going to bring it back. And I was like, there's no way I'll bring it back. About a month later, we talk on the phone and we're like, hey, what if we brought it back? And so we decided, we decided to meet up. And so we met up at a wrestling school in June that doesn't have very good air conditioning. So like it was so hot, my computer wouldn't fire up. Like that's how hot it was in this place. We're all sweating our butts off. Meanwhile, in this heat, there are people training to wrestle. So that's, you know, drinking lots of water. Don't worry. the guy who runs the school is an amazing individual. But he and I were chatting, and we were really on the same page with almost everything. We didn't want to run monthly shows because our market, Phoenix, Arizona, is oversaturated with wrestling. There are people putting on shows that do not draw because there's too much wrestling. So we knew we didn't want to run monthly. So we settled in four times a year. We were going to run shows. We had a venue already lined up because the people that used to take tickets at the IZW shows during the first run that I was talking about now run a building that's like a TV production type building and everything else. So we had a venue that we could use, and it just kind of all came together. We're like, okay, we're going to do this. So we ran a show called Proving Ground in October, did okay for the first show back. And then we knew the next one wasn't going to be until February. And so we built to that. It was called Monster. The main event was a Royal Rumble style match, which I said I would never book a Royal Rumble. And there I was booking a Royal Rumble. And I was hoping that by May, we were getting good crowds, good everything, you know, by our May show. We sold out the building. We ran out of chairs. I remember having to walk out to Jen, who works the door, and told her, we're out of chairs. And, you know, and at the door, ticket of $20 each, right? I said, we're out of chairs. If somebody wants to come in, warn them, say it's at this point, you're probably not going to find a chair. It's going to be standing room only, and only charge them $10. And people were still coming in to watch our show. And the crowd was great. It was lively. We're starting to put out the YouTube videos now because we got a guy who does a great job putting those together, our highlight videos for each match. And the most rewarding thing about that show, and I get to do so much. I know a lot of these wrestlers now, them thanking me for pushing them. You know, my other best friend, Miranda Morales, she produces our backstage promo segments and does interviews between all the matches. And to see her grow as a performer is amazing. To develop that relationship with these legends that I worked with as an announcer and whatever, and now we're working hand in hand, is so rewarding. The most rewarding part of the show is after the main event, a guy by the name of Watson, he wins our Monster, which is the Rumble, and he gets to pick whatever match he wants. And so he's feuding with a guy by the name of Mr. Classic. He says he's going to finally get his hands on Mr. Classic. It's going to be in a ladder match. The winner gets to be number one contender for a heavyweight championship. And that event's on May 16th. Well, he accidentally says March 16th. He's like, so on March 16th, we're going to do this. And people are like, no, it's May, whatever. And the whole crowd starts chanting, we want March. We want March. We want March. And to know that we're putting out a product that they don't want to have to wait for, is that was so rewarding. And myself and the guy who I run it with, we're backstage and we're laughing. He's like, what are they chanting? I'm like, they're chanting, we want March. And we both smiled because, again, when we got into this, we were like, we're not doing more than four a year. We're not getting sucked into doing monthly shows and have it go downhill. And we both started chanting, and only the locker room can hear us, you get May, you get May. But there's also a lot of value to anticipation. And it's something that there are companies that are running one to two times a month out here. We had a promotion that ran against us in October and ran against us last Saturday. And we sold our show out. When they ran against us in October, they drew 19 people. And so they did better this past Saturday. Actually, their show went pretty well as well. And so and we have promotions out here locally that are doing good things. There's a company out here in Arizona that I encourage everybody to check out. It's called Party Hard Wrestling. I think you would like it. Their stuff's on IWTV. And they don't put on a brand of wrestling that I personally enjoy. But as a promoter, I respect what they've built, and I respect the fact that they have found their fan base, and their fan base loves it, and their fan base gets involved. And I encourage people to check it out, because kind of like Chair Shot Radio, kind of like your show, it's not for everybody, right? None of what we do is for everybody. It's an acquired taste. So in my opinion, you can't decide whether or not you like IZW or Party Hard Wrestling or whoever until you try it. And that's what wrestling is all about. Try it. You might like it, and you'll find something you like. But to be able to put on the product that we do is so rewarding. One of the most rewarding things outside of people chanting we want May is the fact that I'm not a wrestler. I've never trained to be a wrestler. I've taken three bumps in my life back when I was a figurehead in IZW during the first run, and I literally had to be shown how to do it that day before the show so that I could pull it off during the show. And it was always to get somebody else over. So when I come up with, you know, the creative portion of a wrestling show, and I can't do it in the ring. So one of the great things about what we do, and we have agents, like we assign agents to our matches, and it's veterans, and to be able to put something on paper and talk to them about it, and then for them to put a match together that tells that story in the ring and makes my ideas better and gets the crowd engaged and gets people wanting to come back, like that's just so amazing and rewarding. And I ran wrestling shows in 2016 for a company called PHX Wrestling. And I personally burned out. And because I tried to do everything. I didn't want help because I felt like it had to be exactly my way. And one of the biggest things that I've learned this time around is I got to let other people do stuff so that I can be healthy and happy and successful, so the company can be healthy and happy and successful. So as often happens when you get involved in anything, and it's definitely happened in wrestling, it's taught me a lot about life. It's taught me a lot about how to be a better person. And that's why I can never knock wrestling, because wrestling has made me better as an individual and enhanced my life and not just taken away from my life. And it'll take away from you. Wrestling owes you nothing. And it can be negative and bad sometimes. And it's a crazy, crazy world. And there's still a lot of the carny elements to it. But I am forever indebted to the world of professional wrestling. And what I'm doing now with Impact Zone Wrestling is something that I believe in. It's manageable. It's fun. And I love it. And I encourage everybody to check it out.
Yeah, definitely. And it's good that you're having both the success with the promotion, but also finding that balance in your life where it's not the all-encompassing thing that you're involved in. Who are some of the bigger names that you've worked with in Impact Zone Wrestling? And who are some of the names that perhaps weren't big names but have gone on to do good things?
Yeah, we've been lucky enough to work with, back when I first started with Rising Phoenix Wrestling, we booked guys like Joey Ryan. We booked Frankie Kazarian came out and worked some of our shows. We had different people come through at different times. With Impact Zone Wrestling, I mean, Impact Zone Wrestling had, you know, a trainee out of California by the name of John Cena that once worked one of their shows. And Chris Hero, of course, is Cassius Ohno, would come out and work their shows. They've had talent go on to be on television, on to do amazing things. The big ring announcer for the longest time for Impact Zone Wrestling was a guy by the name of Justin Roberts, who you know, everybody knows now. Justin Roberts at our October show made a surprise appearance at the end for a birthday celebration for the Navajo Warrior, because he lives out here. And so Justin Roberts has been great in accommodating us and helping us out when needed. Kind of crazy. One of the legends of IZW is a guy by the name of Hollywood Yates, and it's not a name that people are going to recognize. But anybody who watched the redo of American Gladiators that took place in the U.S., there was an American Gladiator by the name of Wolf, and that's actually him. And he was the American Gladiator Wolf for a long time when they brought that back. Just a lot of different stars that have come through. And now we're focusing on building up that next crop and the next group. IZW is really a mix of veterans as well as a lot of the young talent and bringing them up and bringing them through. But even through ring announcing and different things that I got to do, you know, I got to work closely with Adam Pearce for a long time. Of course, now works backstage for WWE. And you know, I remember I did a show for the NWA as a ring announcer at the Celebrity Theater here in Arizona, biggest crowd I ever ring announced in front of, a couple thousand people. And Adam Pearce was on the show, and his locker room, he was with Dave Marquez and all the people that were running it, and that's where I changed as the ring announcer. And I had these major memories I have of this show. I remember going backstage during intermission, and for some reason in the first half of the show, the first four matches, I probably drank like four bottles of water. And when you're sitting there after drinking four bottles of water, Mother Nature calls. And so I run backstage, and you know, I run to the restroom, start using the restroom, and Adam Pearce starts timing me and how long I'm in the restroom. And he's like, and at some point he's like, oh, call the Guinness Book of World Records. He's about to break it. And I still remember that Adam Pearce, a great, you know, great performer, somebody I have so much respect for. He was booking Ring of Honor when I worked with Ring of Honor too, and got to rekindle that. But for some reason took time out of day to be like, he would say, you're doing a good job. But here's the thing about how I know he meant it. It's very easy for somebody to be like, good job, good job, good game, good job, whatever. You're doing a good job, and here's why. And so he would explain why I was doing a good job. And that told me he actually meant it and he was actually paying attention. And I still remember because his flight was delayed. And so they pick him up from the airport. They drive in. They drop him off the back door of the building. He wheels his bag up, leaves his bag, and goes right to the ring to cut a show opening promo. Like from the car. Doesn't check in. Doesn't see the locker room. Doesn't see anybody. And cuts a promo that had 1,500 people ready to kill him. And so when he came out later in the night for the main event, it was on and it was over and it was amazing. And that was just like, I was just like, that is a masterclass in how to cut a promo for the local audience to build the main event where he's going to lose. And, you know, the baby face is going to go over and make that baby face. And I just remember getting to do that and getting to see that. You know, I've gotten to work closely with a Dave Marquez, who runs Championship Wrestling from Hollywood and also is a big part of the NWA now with Billy Corgan and Dave Lagana. I've been lucky enough to work with Dave Lagana and interact with him. And the whole reason I got to work with Dave Lagana ever and talk to him was because when I was writing for 411 Mania, he was running iwantwrestling.com or something like that after leaving WWE. I linked to one of his articles. And I think he wrote about Mick Foley, and I put an excerpt from there and a link back to it. And he sends me a message, and he's like, the hits on my website spiked because of your link on 411 Mania. And so then we just started communicating, and we've kept in touch ever since. Yeah, it's just crazy, the world of wrestling. You know, we will watch WWE. Since Patrick O'Dowd and I have been podcasting for almost 9 years now, you know, we watch WWE, and we've interviewed Kevin Owens. We've interviewed Adam Cole multiple times, Johnny Gargano, Tommaso Ciampa, you know, Billy Kay, like so many of the performers that we see on television, we've interviewed and we've interacted with. And it's to see that they all made it and they all made it to that level is just mind blowing sometimes. So really, really cool way that, you know, our lives have been able to intersect with pro wrestling.
Yeah, absolutely. And wow. I think that is the fun of being part of the wrestling world, that you get to interact with these people who you look up to as fans more than anything, and then you end up working with them, working with the likes of Dave Lagana. That's mind-blowing, absolutely mind-blowing. So let's go on back onto the Chair Shot Radio, thechairshot.com. Obviously, we've spoke about how there's a transition going with e-wrestling news, and I know that we're all excited about that. We're all hyped for that. But where do you see that move taking Chairshot? Where do you see the future of Chairshot as a brand and as a company?
It's kind of funny. We actually have a conference call set for tomorrow as we kind of go on and you know, with the Chairshot moving forward. With the move to e-wrestling news, one thing that we knew that we were never going to do is it wasn't going to be the end of the Chairshot by any stretch of the imagination. Far too much time, effort, energy, blood, sweat, and tears, so to speak, has been put into building this brand, and it wasn't going to go away. And it's a brand that people love. There were a lot of people that were, you know, not unsure if we should make the move and do this. And it's all about growing that audience. But the Chair Shot as a brand is definitely not going anywhere. We're going to focus more on the podcasting side. And our podcasts are still going to appear on E-Wrestling News, but we're going to focus on that as well. And almost focused on putting out less content, but like a premium type of content. We're not going to charge for it, but a premium level of content that people are going to love and enjoy and get into. And if it's the only thing that they absorbed, it's going to bring them that satisfaction and that level of happiness. And so if there's so much content out there, and if you can't absorb it all and you need to focus on something smaller, we're going to have you on that. We're also going to start releasing more apparel. I want to put out 2 t-shirts per month and things that people can enjoy wearing that, you know, in a non-wrestling setting as well. And honestly, I want to focus on building my own personal brand. I actually am starting to work with a publicist who can get me more, you know, radio appearances when radio shows talk about wrestling, especially with WrestleMania and that sort of thing, making more appearances like that and getting that personal brand out there. And using, you know, using that to promote my own content, using that to promote Impact Zone Wrestling, and really kind of all lives under that thing. So we're looking at what we're probably right now, we're kind of calling the Chair Shot Media Group and sort of putting everything under one umbrella and fleshing out what that looks like. But we know we're onto something. We know the brand has been the biggest thing about the Chair Shot and the brand that we've been able to grow and develop. And it's just figuring out in this crazy oversaturated world that is the wrestling media, I guess, internet wrestling media, where does it fit? How does it fit? And how do we make it stand out? Because there's just so much that doesn't stand out. I'll see a website I've never heard of before, and it's been around for 10 years, and their traffic isn't great. I didn't really know much about eWrestlingNews.com until I was researching some next steps to take, and they've been a great partner in all this. So it's you know, I know sort of where it's going, but not even fully. But between now and WrestleMania and the end of the summer, that's when it's really going to flesh out. And I think we're going to do some really, really, really cool things. My dream is maybe even around WrestleMania 37, since it's going to be in California, is to finally be able to do like some kind of Chair Shot event where we bring everybody together and have a lot of fun and hang out and get to know people and involve some fans and do some of that. So I want it to be a brand that people are going to be talking about, you know, 10 years from now. for whatever reason, whatever we can do to make that happen. That's just how much I believe in it.
Yeah, absolutely. And being a part of that, I know that Paul and I are absolutely excited for the future of Badlands. You obviously know what happened with the whole Brainbuster thing, and it kind of put a dampener on Paul and I was like mindset about a recording podcast. But then when yourself and Rance, aka it's Ray Cash, came and offered that olive branch, yeah, we couldn't praise you enough, and it's brilliant being part of such a professional and exciting team over there at Chairshot. It's really, really lit a fire under us that we want to be better because of it.
And that's how I am too. It just, you always want to be better. You always want to put out good content. It's so funny though, because it's also focusing on what's real. I got to guest host this week, depending on when people listen, Pod is War, because the moderator wasn't able to be on the show. He was sick. And I always told them, as we developed and grew Pod is War over the years, they always focus on what topics are we talking about? What topics are we talking about? What topics are we talking about? And I was just like, the topics don't matter in a lot of ways in what we do. Your show, you know, we talk about, Badlands, the Mount Rushmore of pro wrestling. The Mount Rushmore that you guys pick is secondary to the interactions that you, Paul, and your guest have. Listening to you guys veto each other is hilarious. And when you guys bicker back and forth, and Patrick and I, like when we were doing the Greg DeMarco show and it was just the two of us, and then we added Miranda, like, there are shows where we won't talk about wrestling at all. We call it show pourri, and it's just as entertaining, sometimes more so, because it's really about – because, look, we talk about the same stuff as everybody else does, right? Like there's no – you know, there's 100 different podcasts that are going to talk about the same topics that we talk about. It's the people and the way they interact that makes it special, and that's what that's what the Chair Shot is to me, and that's why, you know – we're bringing the people we bring. Sometimes we're bringing people and they don't work out. And that's just a factor of life and media and all of that. But to be able to bring people together and have them grow and learn and see who sticks and who doesn't, you know, for every Badlands who comes over to the Chairshot Radio Network and kills it, there's three or four others that do an episode or two and fizzle out and just don't work. That's what makes this great. And that's what makes this fun. So yeah, it's an ever-growing, ever-evolving process. But to have you guys on here is something that I've been really lucky to do. I remember when Ray came to me and was like, hey, check these guys out. They need a home. And I listened to the show, and I was just like, you know, why are they coming here? Like, they could probably do better than us. And of course, you guys are just so excited about it. And as I listened to it, I felt so lucky that, you know, it sucks to feel lucky that another network goes down, but I did. And that's just kind of, you know, that just is the God's honest truth. Like, I felt lucky that they went kaput and we got to bring over such a great show as yourself. And there were other shows that we talked to and didn't want to come over, and that's fine too. I don't hold that against anybody. There's, you know, it's a free world out there and we get to do so much, but to have you guys on board has just been so exciting. And, you know, even if you look at just, you know, the logistical on paper, you're the only British inspired show that we have, but that's just a dialect. You guys aren't talking about British wrestling. You guys bring that flair and that level of language that I love and enjoy so much, and no one else does. But if you guys didn't speak the King's English and you spoke our crappy English, it'd still be entertaining and fun. So I would still love every second of it.
Oh, thank you so much. It honestly blows us away that people have really taken Badlands to their hearts. It's essentially two idiots from England. Well, one's technically Welsh, but talking to guests about wrestling, and I think that's the beauty of it. It's such a simple idea, but it works on so many levels with the guests that we bring on, and even when we do solo shows, we have that kind of rapport where we can be idiots, but we're putting out a brilliant show. And yeah, I'm really, really proud of that show. It's so much fun. It's so much fun to record. And I think that essentially is what a podcast should be about. You should be having fun about it, because if you're not having fun, it comes across. And I listen to a lot of podcasts. I listen at podcasts at three times the speed to get through the amount of podcasts that I listen to during a day. And the thing that keeps me invested in a podcast is not, like you said, it's not the the topic. It's not what the show's about. It's the people on the podcast. Whether if they, I can feel that they love what they're talking about, then it makes me kind of love what they're talking about, if you understand what I mean.
Oh, yeah, 100%. It's obvious when people aren't having fun and when they're not enjoying what they're doing. And that's such a big part of this whole thing. You've got to have fun. You've got to enjoy it. Otherwise, don't do it. You know, this is a hobby for all of us. So very, you know, like 1% of people get to make any money doing what we're doing. And so we do it out of love. And if you're doing something out of love and you don't love it, find something else, because it's something else that you can love and enjoy and do. But that's the kind of, when I first got into podcasting, that was the same thing. The conversations that people listened to on the early episodes of the Greg DeMarco show, those were going to happen whether we recorded them or not. Mm-hmm. So we just decided to start recording them and having them with a headset on instead of, you know, on a cell phone. And that's really what it should be. It's just, podcasting is just a window into conversations of real life, at least the best podcasting, in my opinion. Now we plan and we organize and we whatever, but we're planning and we're organizing just so we can have those same conversations that people are going to enjoy and love. And that's really what, to me, my opinion, and sounds like you would agree, that's the best stuff right there, is when people are having fun and people are enjoying everything that they're doing.
Absolutely. And what a great point to go on to the my favorite segment of the show, the word association segment. I've already explained to you a little bit of how it goes, but yeah, I'm just going to throw some words or phrases from this wacky world of wrestling at you, and you just tell me the first thing that comes to mind, whether that's the first word or you want to go on a mad rant, that's totally acceptable. So let's start with, we'll start at the top, we'll go with, what are your thoughts on Vince McMahon?
Every single time
that someone always goes,
well, it's hard because without Vince McMahon, we got none of this.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
We don't get to do this. This business isn't where it is. You know, it's like WrestleMania weekend. People love WrestleMania weekend. Some people refuse to call it WrestleMania weekend. They call it wrestling weekend. It's a celebration of the business. It doesn't exist without Vince McMahon. And people want to hate on Vince all they want, and that's great. And it's kind of biting the hand that feeds you, though, because we wouldn't have this love of ours without Vince McMahon. Never would have. And that's really where we sort of stand today. So, yeah, we owe all of this. The conversation we're having right now, we owe it to Vincent Kennedy McMahon. And the other thing I think of when I hear Vince McMahon is everybody doing a Vince McMahon impersonation. Because everyone loves to do the Vince McMahon impersonation. But we all got to be honest with ourselves. If I sit there and I'm on the phone and I'm like, God damn it, pal, and whatever, none of us are impersonating Vince McMahon. All of us are impersonating Bruce Pritchard, impersonating Vince McMahon. And at this point, and Bruce Pritchard has gotten to the point where you cannot talk about Vince McMahon without thinking of Bruce Pritchard's impersonation of Vince McMahon.
Absolutely. Wow, that's brilliant. Yeah, it's the first thing that you come in. It's either it's good shit, pal, or like you said, it's God damn it.
It's so funny you say that. Like occasionally when Patrick Goodell's not available, Miranda Morales and I, instead of doing Chair Shot Radio and the hashtag Miranda show, we'll do one show. And it's the hashtag Miranda and Greg DeMarco, super such good shit show, pal. And it's that name is inspired by Vince McMahon's such good shit, pal.
So next we will go with his potential heir apparent, Triple H.
Well, and when people hear my appearance on Badlands, they'll know he's on my Mount Rushmore. Triple H is the guy, if I were starting a wrestling company, I would throw as much money as humanly possible at Triple H to run it. Like, he is a brilliant mind in the business. I firmly believe had he not married Stephanie McMahon, he'd still be an executive in the world of pro wrestling. Like, it's just, that's sort of the Macho Man, Randy Savage, the cream rises to the top. And Triple H to me is the guy. I hope he gets the chance to really run that thing, because I look at NXT. It's my favorite product on all of television for wrestling. And I think that it's just amazing. And I love every second of it. So to me, Triple H is, he's the game, but he's also the guy. And to me, he's the guy in pro wrestling.
Yeah, I've said for the longest time, he just seems to have the finger on the pulse of what the majority of wrestling fans want. For someone who, like I said, we mentioned on Badlands, that was never the one guy, he's head and shoulders an amazing executive.
And you talk about his finger on the pulse. I want to comment on that one second, because if you look at everything he pushes and everything he promotes, it's real easy when someone gets into a position, they just push the people and everything that are like them. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't. He pushes the smaller guys. He pushes the athletes that he thinks are going to entertain people. And that's his biggest strength. He's not just pushing a bunch of Triple H carbon copies. In fact, that couldn't be further from the truth. Everything he's pushing is nothing like what he was.
Yeah, and also the fact that he does these post-show press conferences where he gets like a gauge of what was liked and what was not liked about that show. He's always kind of like learning what fans want and almost reacting to it.
Yeah, exactly. He's I don't think he ever stops learning, and I think that's probably one of his biggest strengths. And I don't know that. I've never asked him that question. Never been able to ask him that question. I don't know Triple H. You know, I'd love to sit down with him someday. Who knows, that'll ever happen. But that's what I would ask him too. Like, I bet he's got a philosophy that's never stopped learning.
Yeah, absolutely. So next we'll go with the enemy of NXT. We'll go with Cody Rhodes.
Cody Rhodes to me is brilliant, and he's a brilliant mind, a brilliant performer, a great mind for the wrestling business. I think somewhat he can be a little off at times in terms of what he's thinking and what he's doing. He's a lot like his dad, more than he would ever want to admit. But at the same time, I think despite the fact that he's the face in, you know, of AEW, and he was the impetus for kind of changing how people view the business and changing what they're doing, and he left WWE and he made a career out of it, I still don't know if he's figured out who he is. Mm-hmm. I really don't. And I still wonder if we still haven't seen the best out of Cody Rhodes, and I still wonder if we're going to see the best out of Cody Rhodes in a WWE ring when it's all said and done. I really do. And that's not a knock on him. It's not a knock on AEW. Look, there's a reason why all these WWE contracts that they're doling out are 5 years. That to me tells you how long they expect AEW to last is 5 years. But I really think the best is yet to come from Cody Rhodes. And I still think it's going to happen for Vince McMahon and Triple H.
Yeah. And you touched on a point then that I've made a lot of times, to be fair. Cody is like almost this dichotomy in wrestling. He's the absolute face of AEW. He's got this massive groundswell of support, but he still tries to be a heelish kind of wrestling character, which he's kind of not able to pull off because everybody adores him so much.
And that's the hard part too, because he's better as a heel. I think he's a natural heel. He's kind of a dick. But at the same time, yeah, you love him. You love him for what he's provided. And it's also really hard to establish that line between Cody Rhodes, the performer, and Cody Rhodes, the executive. And that's really hard to do on any level. And the fans just know too much. And so it's like, what do you do? Do you pretend it doesn't exist? Do you embrace it? Do you acknowledge it? And I don't think they fully figured that part out either.
Yeah, absolutely. So next we'll go with who I would say is the GOAT. We'll go with Le Champion, Chris Jericho.
Jericho, I wouldn't call him the GOAT, but I definitely think he's
podcast, and I'll edit that bit out.
But he's definitely one of the greatest of all time. He is one of them. He is the master of reinvention, and that's if 20 years from now, I think that's what he's going to be known for. Everybody's going to be known for something. Like Cody Rhodes will be known that he started AEW, right? He'll be known for that, and he'll, you know, be known for the master of reinvention. You look at all the characters that Chris Jericho has had, they've pretty much all worked too. And that's a testament to the performer. It's not about some people, you need the right character. For Chris Jericho, you just needed the right performer. And he can do anything, even at the advanced age, even though he's not who he used to be in the ring. He's still over. He still draws a reaction. He's still Chris Jericho. And that's something that I appreciate, that I love. He's a Hall of Famer already, multiple times over, you know, with everything he's done. And when he goes in, it's going to be an amazing celebration. But yeah, he's definitely one of the top 10 performers in the history of this business.
Yeah, I agree. It's for me, it is the reinvention that makes him so special. The fact that he can always keep himself relevant with he got a scarf over. He got writing people's name on a list over. The guy, he can do no wrong for me. In my eyes, I absolutely love him. The last one we'll go with, Greg, is what does creating wrestling content mean to you?
That's, you know, the song by Eminem called Lose Yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what that is for me. Like, I lose everything else that's going on in the world, good and bad. Everything else that's going on in the world disappears when I'm creating wrestling content. It is, that's what I was born to do, in my opinion. You know, it's not what puts food on the table. It's not what, you know, keeps the house from being foreclosed on. It's not what puts gas in the tank, but that's what puts gas in my tank. That's what fuels me and everything that I do. It's made me a better person. It's made me a worse person at times, but in the end, it made me a better person. And it's why I'm here. Like I said, it's what I was put on this earth to do, for better or for worse. And I love it. And I can't imagine my life not doing it.
What a great way to end the show. Thank you so much for being not only on the show, Greg, but for just being you, for being the guy behind Chairshot, the guy that gave us a chance when everything was going to shit. We can't appreciate you enough, and I'm so glad that I've had the opportunity to sit down and chat with you. It's been amazing, and I'm so excited for the future of Chairshot going forward as a brand and as a company. Yeah, I'm glad to be on the inside of that. Tell the Why We Watch listeners where they can get hold of everything that you do in this world of wrestling.
Absolutely. You know, obviously, thechairshot.com is a great place to do all of that. Head on over to, you know, at Chairshot Greg on all of your forms of social media, because I don't really know where certain things are headed in terms of all the content, and I want to get it to all live in one place. Where when that happens, it's going to be available for people to see and find out where it is at Chairshot Greg, whether it's Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook. Chairshot Greg is the place to be. If you're looking for a wrestling t-shirt, do us a solid and go to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot. And if you're anywhere near the state of Arizona, definitely head out to izwwrestling.com at izwwrestlingaz on all of your forms of social media, and check us out as well, because we firmly believe in what we're doing, especially because if you like the old school but you also like the talent of today, I think you're really going to like what we're doing there. So, and if you want to email me, because I'm not on social media all the time, just send an email to gregdemarco@thechairshot.com. I'll reply. We'll have some fun.
Absolutely. This guy's honestly, he's such a cool guy to be involved with. I'm really honored that I get to work with him. Go and check his stuff out. Definitely go and check out Impact Zone Wrestling. I intend to do that almost as soon as I finish recording this. Thank you so much for coming on, Greg. I really, really do appreciate it. Anyway, you can follow me on Twitter at DJ Kirkby. You can follow this show at Why We Watch Pod. Thank you so much again, Greg. You've been an absolute star for the best part of 2.5 hours. I really, really do appreciate it. Thank you, people, for listening, and that is the end.
Listening to the one and only Visionaries Wrestling Network, envisioning excellence and providing your perfect podcast experience.